When China's leader Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, he spearheaded massive changes, a strong anti-corruption drive, the centralisation of power, an expansion of the country's geopolitical and high-tech reach. Xi's China is a country to be reckoned with, an economic, technological and military superpower, and Xi himself seems untouchable, with no limits on his term as leader, no visible challenges. But is that really the case? In a new paper titled Xi Jinping, The Backlash, Richard McGregor, a longtime China watcher and senior fellow at the Lowy Institute, documents a growing resistance to Xi and the party state. Some of that resistance is well documented. The US, Europe, Australia, Asia, Africa, they're all rethinking their relationship to China in some form. But what about within China itself? Is there reason to think there's a backlash growing there? And if so, how does it express itself? Richard McGregor joins me in the studio now. Warm welcome, Richard.
Hi there.
And joining us also today, economist, diplomat and former ambassador to China, Jeff Raby, who argues that if there is a backlash, it's not so much against Xi himself, but against the party. Welcome to you, Jeff.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Richard, you write about this growing backlash inside and outside China. Is it Xi himself people have a problem with, or the direction he's taken China in?
Well, I think it's both, because they go together. Now, I should say at the outset, I'm not saying Xi's about to lose his job or anything like that, but you know, I've tried to tabulate or calibrate the sort of opposition he does have in China, because he does have a lot of enemies. Now, in many respects, that's natural after you've been in power for 5 or 6 years, but I think people haven't looked at that closely enough. And I've kind of, in a very simple sense, I would say he's got good enemies and bad enemies. The good enemies are the technocratic elite, who dislike his focus on the state component of the economy. They're very angry about the way he's stopped or unwound legal reform, and they're particularly incensed with his abolition of term limits. In other words, this president in perpetuity, president for life. People were very angry when that happened a couple of years ago, because I think it unwinds the sort of incremental advances that China has made in its governing system, and also an important part of the stability of the country, which is the transfer of power between leaders. That's the good enemies. The bad enemies, which are underestimated, come from the anti-corruption campaign. Very simply, if you think about that, he has destroyed the careers, the wealth, the power, the privileges of a vast number of people who've enjoyed that power and privilege for decades in China, because the anti-corruption campaign has been so far-reaching. Mm. Really powerful people and families have been taken down. And I don't think that is something that is washed out of a political system quickly. If you look at the history of political campaigns in China, you know, they come back, you know, years later, and people settle scores and the like. And I think, just finally, that's a big reason why Xi doesn't want to step down, because he knows if he steps down, his family, his acolytes, perhaps not Xi himself, would be vulnerable to the sorts of enemies he's made in the past 5 to 6 years, to sort of lock them up as well, as it were.
And so what drove him in this respect? Because I think it's pertinent to the next discussion. I mean, he also knew the history. So, you know, he wasn't... What did he think? He didn't have a... How's his family going to live there, even when he goes, if he's set all this in motion?
It's a fascinating question, because, of course, he does know the history. When he was tapped on the shoulder to be leader in 2007, to take over in 2012, nobody really saw that. I can find that he would become the kind of leader he became when he took over in 2012. He was a compromise candidate. He turns out to be a very uncompromising person. Very briefly, I think there's two things happened. First, once he sort of took a hard look at the Communist Party in that time, he saw a lot of the pillars of party power crumbling: corruption in the military, fiefdoms in big state companies, and the like, and that he thought was cancerous long-term for party power. Secondly, in 2012, we had a number of big corruption scandals involving people in the Politburo, Bo Xilai most famously. And if you read the official Chinese media these days, they think that Bo Xilai and a second person were almost trying to effect an internal coup. In other words, stop Xi getting the top job. And so I think Xi's sort of reaction is a backlash against threats to him and threats to party power.
There was a reform period in China in the 1980s, which saw the growth of private enterprise, and that led to the economic boom that we're well used to discussing. Now it would appear Xi wants the party in the state to play a larger role. How do those who've guided China's economic boom, and I'm thinking of Jack Ma, who stood down very suddenly last year, was most interesting, and now people are wondering about it, you know, the entrepreneurs, the reformers, how do they view this?
Actually, Jack Ma said he would stand down. He hasn't followed through yet. I think the key to the strength of the Chinese economy are private entrepreneurs or the private sector. About 70 to 80% of GDP economic output is the private sector. Xi is actually interesting, I think, interestingly enough, reverse course or changed his rhetoric a little bit. Late last year when the economy started to slow quite rapidly, too rapidly for the leadership, I think he was persuaded by some of his advisors that he should be more open to the private sector, more solicitous of it, and he held a number of big meetings with entrepreneurs. Prior to that point, he'd focused overwhelmingly on the importance of the state sector. So that's an area where we might look at Xi Jinping starting to be a little bit more pragmatic, because certainly the economy is an area of quite open debate in China. Many of the people who'd been, you know, the architects of the reform area had been savagely critical of the direction of the economy under Xi.
So, Jeff Raby, listening to what Richard is saying, do you agree that Xi has made many enemies domestically to a degree that is not recognised in the West with the direction he's taken the country in?
John, I think there needs to be a bit more perspective and balance on this. Obviously, if you have a big anti-corruption campaign, which Xi has overseen, you will make many enemies. I think that's largely goes without saying, and she has made many enemies amongst powerful families and others that he brought down. But equally, the anti-corruption campaign has been widely and broadly popular. People welcomed the anti-corruption campaign. They were fed up with the way the party was behaving. And so, you know, Xi's motivation was all about party building and strengthening the party. But it's not without, I think, a wide base of support amongst the broader population. Just as you know, we talk about how Xi's overseen the economy, the fact is in the 7 years Xi has been leader, the economy has grown by 40%, per capita incomes have grown by 40%. There's not a sense in China today of a generalised backlash, but then all politics that matter in China are elite politics, and certainly in the small elite ruling group, there is a lot of tension for many of the reasons that Richard's outlined.
Such that he should be worried about it?
Oh, no, I don't think so. He has, you know, great power, and he's got all the instruments of political control, and he's purged the army. He's got the security forces very much lined up around him. So the question is, how does this challenge to Xi, how does it evolve? How does it manifest itself? And it's very unclear. What I would say is that because it's elite politics, if anything does happen, we'll only know after the event. But certainly, just in terms of common sense, you don't expect people like Bo Xilai, Zhou Yongkang, very powerful leaders in their own time, to sit and rot in jail without plotting to find a way to get back into power.
Yes, you've written that one of the more unfortunate overtones of this, or effects of this, was, say, the crackdown on the human rights lawyers' advocates, which was a growing sense, as I read it anyway, of an opening up and a building of Chinese law, and that this was subsumed by this more authoritarian direction under Xi. Now, is that an area that is, do the elite political types worry about that?
No, I think elites worry about political power and control. I mean, more broadly, people worry about the crackdown on rights lawyers, which I think is the probably singular most unfortunate aspect of Xi's authoritarianism. But it's not about Xi the man. I think that's a point I make in my review of Richard's book, a very fine book. My point is that this is systemic and structural within the Communist Party, and what happened at the time she took power in 2012, by then the old political reforms of Deng Xiaoping, of collective leadership and the fiction, as I call it, of two-year terms, that had broken down. And so you're back to the bare-knuckle Leninist party that the Communist Party is, and it's kill or be killed. And so Xi is a creature of the system and also the circumstances under which he took power, because Bo Xilai challenged him, as Richard indicated, for the leadership, and that hadn't happened in the reform years. There had not been a contested leadership struggle like this at the end of the day in the whole 30 years of reform. So Xi's circumstances of acceding to power are very different than any of his predecessors, and I see that's where the authoritarianism comes from. And of course, authoritarianism begets authoritarianism in these one-party states.
Richard, do we know much more about Bo Xilai at the moment? By the way, I haven't heard about him for years. He is literally rotting in a jail, but he's surely too powerful to just sit there.
Well, it's a very interesting question. I don't know whether he's rotting in a jail, but he's certainly going grey in a jail. There's actually a prison, I think it's Qingcheng, it's outside of Beijing, where top leaders who've been jailed or senior people in jail, they have a special prison for them. And I think he's probably being looked after quite well. There was a gossipy piece in the media recently about what he liked to do, about demanding the sorts of books he liked to read and that sort of thing. The broader point which Jeff mentions or hints at, you know, could Bo Xilai emerge from prison as the candidate of a sort of hyper-nationalist or crypto-Maoist faction or something like that? Certainly that was speculated on at the time, but, you know, I think that's a long shot. You know, the longer he's in prison, the less likely he emerges as a sort of, you know, Mandela-like to lead his flock.
It's just that, so what you're both...
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes.
You agree with that, Jeff. We're both describing... dramatic events behind the scenes, a sort of semi-coups. I can remember it vividly at the time. And then, you know, Xi having to come in almost to a counter-coup to sort of and really stamp his views. Like, this is all happening under our very noses, isn't it? While it looks as if there's a sort of China's just rolling on and on and on. And really, I suppose that's, Richard, your point you're trying to make. There are really tumultuous seismic events there that we may not fully discern.
Well, I'm just scratching at the surface, let's face it. You know, it's still a highly opaque system, remarkably. You know, the richer as China has got, the more opaque the elite politics have become. You know, we probably know less than we did in the 80s and the 90s and even 10 years ago. That's remarkable.
Really?
It's also part of the asymmetry with the US. I mean, we don't need more information about Donald Trump. You know, we know too much about what's happening in Washington and too little about what's happening in Beijing. America is way overreported, particularly in this country. China is underreported, believe it or not, but in part, that's because it's a struggle to get information. And I think that's a real problem for China as it makes its way overseas. There's absolutely no transparency.
Well, Jeff Raby, this is what you were writing about this week in terms of its soft power. It doesn't have any, you say.
No. And it's a big challenge for China. And I also describe China elsewhere as a constrained superpower. And again, it's a matter of proportionality. China has, you know, great economic strength and weight, great military capacity, but it's very much constrained by many factors. It's the history, it's still an empire with unresolved territories inside its borders, and now it's created a mess of gigantic proportions in Hong Kong. It has no soft power, it's got hostile borders. You know, China's limits to act internationally are highly constrained, and I think this needs to be built into much more of the geopolitical discussion about the rise of China.
Incidentally, do you think that Xi is vulnerable? Do you sense that there are, in this elite group, very clear vulnerabilities?
Oh, for sure. But I do agree with Richard's point. The longer Bo Xilai, Jerry O'Connor and people like this are in prison, the less likely it is that they can come back in some way. But it has to always be balanced against what is a prosperous, growing economy still. As I said, per capita incomes have risen 40% under Xi. That's not a bad record for any political leader. And there is, I think, a high level of satisfaction and contentment with the system as it is amongst the broader population. Always, always the issue for Xi or any leader of China is if the economy falters, therein is the potential for big risk.
Look, thank you both very much indeed. We try to keep a close eye on this. And, of course, it's been a big issue in Australia this week with that Four Corners report. So, Richard McGregor and Jeff Raby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Geraldine.
Richard is the author of Xi Jinping, The Backlash, which is available now. It's a Lowy publication. And Jeff Raby, former ambassador to China, now CEO of the Beijing-based advisory group, Jeff Raby and Associates, and appears on this program from time to time.